Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners presented by the U.S. Sentencing Commission. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Peter Madsen discuss a very popular helpline topic, stipulations. Lori and Pete break down what the term stipulation means, the impact of a plea agreement stipulation on guideline application, and some best practices for including a stipulation under 1B1.2 in a plea agreement. Without further ado, here's Lori and Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Hey, good morning, Lori. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
So far, so good.
So let's talk about stipulations today.
Stipulations. Where do you want to begin?
Well, I think we ought to start by talking about what the term stipulation means or maybe doesn't mean, because I think the word gets used interchangeably, right?
I agree.
So sometimes I think the word stipulation is used just to mean an agreement between the parties. So a plea agreement will contain a stipulation, maybe to a drug quantity or specific offense characteristics that either do or do not apply, or maybe a guideline range. But in that context, the word stipulation really just means the parties agree that this is how this should apply.
Right.
And those kind of stipulations aren't binding on the probation officer and aren't binding on the court.
Correct.
But there's another use of the word stipulations that is anchored to the guidelines and has a very different meaning.
That is true. Like in section 1B1.2, we actually have two different sections in there under section A and under section C, and we should probably address each one of those individually.
All right. Well, you want to start with 1B1.2A, or do you want to speak generally about what stipulations mean under the guidelines?
You know, maybe just start generally, because I think we get a lot of calls on the helpline, and whether it's AUSA or defense counsel or probation officer, the question is this language a stipulation? And in my experience, oftentimes when they're asking the question if it's a stipulation, to me, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is probably not a stipulation, because this, like when there's a stipulation, there really is an agreement between the parties. There's no surprise. There's no I gotcha moment. This really is, you know, the government and defense counsel coming together to truly agree on what we have under subsection 1A, or not 1A, I'm sorry, 1B1.2A, where sometimes they actually might stipulate to a more serious offense than the one they pled guilty to.
Right. So I like what you said about when people call into the helpline, and we do get a lot of calls on this topic. If it's a prosecutor or a defense attorney asking if it's a stipulation, you're right. The answer is probably no, because if they don't know that it's a stipulation, then they certainly didn't enter into that very detailed agreement.
Exactly.
But a probation officer calling and saying, I'm not sure if I have a stipulation or not, that makes sense, because sometimes it really does depend on how that plea agreement is written.
Very true. And I think oftentimes when it comes to the probation officer asking the question, we often will ask them the question, well, did you talk to the parties? You know, right. What was their agreement that you may not have been privy to?
So let's talk specifically about what it means to have a stipulation under the guidelines under section 1B1.2.
So under 1B1.2A, we specifically say in a case of a plea agreement written or made orally on the record containing a stipulation that specifically establishes a more serious offense than the offense of conviction. And I think it's probably better to start with an example. Oftentimes, we see a defendant plead guilty to distribution of fentanyl. However, the parties then stipulate to that higher base offense level of 38, because there's an actual factual stipulation that the defendant in fact committed a more serious offense of distribution of fentanyl resulting in death. So that's something where the parties certainly are walking into court hand in hand, so to speak, on this agreement that yes, we're going to plead guilty to distribution of fentanyl, but we're also going to have this higher base offense level because death did in fact result.
Right. So generally that higher base offense level, usually a 38, can only be used if the offense of conviction establishes the death.
Exactly.
But in this situation, they would have stipulated, hey, we're not pleading to that offense that involves death, but we're going to agree that the guidelines will be calculated as if that had occurred.
Right. And I think oftentimes they do that because they get away from the mandatory minimum. If you're pleading guilty to distribution of fentanyl resulting in death, you're looking at a 20-year man-min. Otherwise, just the distribution of fentanyl might vary depending upon the quantity of fentanyl itself. So it's certainly beneficial oftentimes to the defendant.
Right, but it also recognizes the more serious offense conduct, taking that victim into account. So a number of different factors that might come into play for why somebody would enter into a stipulation right. rather than pleading to that more serious offense.
Good point.
So that's one way
right.
that we have a stipulation under A. What's the other one that we see?
The other one we see under 1B1.2C is when there is a plea agreement containing a stipulation that specifically establishes the commission of additional offenses as though the defendant had in fact been convicted of those additional counts. So say a defendant pleads guilty to one count of robbery, but stipulates to two other robberies they committed. That's what we're talking about there. They're actually agreeing to, in essence, a guideline calculation for three counts as opposed to just the one that they're pleading guilty to.
Right. And that's actually the example in the application notes, that robbery example that you just provided. And I think the benefit, again, is the same as what we just discussed. Somebody is limited to that 20-year statutory maximum penalty for one count of robbery, but the guidelines will be calculated as if there were three robberies.
Exactly.
All right. And that way, again, the other conduct is taken into account. The other victims are taken into account.
Exactly.
So, considering that we do get a lot of calls on this, I think one of the important things to distinguish between is a lot of times that plea agreement will say, you know, like we talked about, the stipulated specific offense characteristics or maybe a guideline range, but also that plea agreement contains a factual basis, a statement of facts that the parties stipulate to. So again, that means that the parties are agreeing these are the facts that are going to be placed on the record in support of the guilty plea. And we'll get questions saying, hey, but there's a stipulated factual basis. Doesn't that mean I have a stipulation and I'm going to calculate accordingly? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be necessarily enough. And I think we talk about that the training division or like best practices. We like to see a plea agreement that specifically outlines, you know, the parties have contemplated a stipulation pursuant to 1B1.2, whether it's 1B1.2A or C. It's just helpful to have that information in the plea agreement so it's very clear. And also maybe even spelling out the guideline calculation itself. If you see a guideline calculation for other offenses that they're stipulating to, that's a pretty good indication that the parties have this joint agreement or stipulation per se for that additional conduct.
Right. So that's the advice that we give generally is be as specific as possible in that plea agreement. Make sure you're citing 1B1.2, whether it's A or C. And like you said, spell out the guidelines. Then there can be no mistake as to what the parties are anticipating will occur with the calculation.
Exactly.
But you, going back to your fentanyl example earlier, that's a pretty frequent call. Someone who says, but the defendant stipulated in the factual basis that death occurred. Doesn't that mean I can use that higher calculation? So that's a good example of right. the difference between the two. No, the stipulation in that context just means he's agreeing that the facts involve the death. The stipulation to being calculated under the higher offense level has to be under 1B1.2A, needs to be spelled out in that way.
Exactly.
All right. Anything else that we need to clear up on stipulations?
I don't think so. I think it is important just to go back to the robbery example where the defendant pled guilty to one count of robbery and then they stipulate to those other two. You know, we talked in a previous podcast about doing pseudo counts. In essence, you're just doing a guideline calculation for all three counts of robbery. If you want to learn a little bit more about pseudo counts, certainly you can take a look at the other podcast we did. I think it was in April of 2025. That might be somewhat helpful as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. In that pseudo count podcast, we talked about how pseudo counts can only be used in very limited circumstances. And this is one of those circumstances where there's a stipulation to additional counts. And then you'll count those as pseudo counts and your multiple count rules or adjustments are going to apply accordingly.
Exactly.
All right. Well, as we always say, if you have any questions about this or any other topic, please contact us through the helpline. We have a written online submission form that's great for submitting your question, and then we'll get back to you by phone. But we thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify to stay up to date. If you've got a question for the helpline or want to access any of the resources discussed in this episode, you can find us at ussc.gov. A reminder that registration for the 2025 National Seminar on the Federal Sentencing Guidelines in Salt Lake City from August 19th to 21st is now open. Visit our website for more details. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.